When you're in it and you know it's medical and you evaluate the child and then you treat the child appropriately, all of a sudden things get better. All of a sudden they're talking. All of a sudden they're not having hour-long temper tantrums. All of a sudden they're not constipated and going to the bathroom twice a month. There's so many things, and that's the message. And that's kind of the place where we're in now in society. We've got to get this message out that there is hope and potential.
How is it possible for a parent of a child with autism to become the superhero their child needs now? I'm Len.
And I'm Cass. When our son was diagnosed with moderate to severe autism, we went all in. We spent over a decade learning everything we could on how we could transform to help our son thrive. And guess what? He's doing it. This year, he ran for class president.
Each week on this podcast, we will be sharing the secrets needed for you to become the superhero your child needs.
If you want to learn how to tap into your innate superpowers to help your child thrive, visit AutismParentingSecrets.com.
Welcome to Autism Parenting Secrets. Today with us is Dr. Jared Scowron, and he's been working with children with autism and ADHD for almost two decades. He specializes in using natural, non-pharmaceutical therapies to support healthy neurological development. And these natural treatments support healthy language development, calm behavior, regular sleep patterns, emotional stability, improved memory, all for children with autism and ADHD. He lectures internationally. We've seen him several times at conferences. He's really all about educating parents on how natural therapies can help their child reach their full potential. And as the creator of Spectrum Awakening, Dr. Scowron aims to benefit all families and children with the same supplement protocol for autism and ADHD that he uses in his private practice. His latest protocol of biomedical supplements is called the Scowron Solution, and he's also authored the Amazon best-selling book, 100 Natural Remedies for Your Child, which is in our library and usually on loan, and that's actually how we discovered him. So welcome, Dr. Scowron.
Well, thank you so much for having me here. It's truly a pleasure.
Well, we're excited you're here, and your book was how we connected with you first time. But then what was totally mind-blowing is when we were up for our Sunrise startup program in Massachusetts, and they said, oh, well, we have a guest here today. And they mentioned you. And I was like, oh my God, how stinking amazing having a doctor who's learning about other protocols to support kids with autism, like beyond medicine. So really that whole social emotional connection for kids.
Yeah, just that a doctor was curious enough to want to learn about different options as opposed to the standard therapies and protocols. You demonstrated to us that you had a curiosity and a desire to be helpful more than just about anybody we had run into. So we were super impressed. The doctor was learning as much as he could. So, so again, we're big fans and really excited for this conversation.
Well, thank you. Me too. And you know, we're all in the middle of this, you know, whether you're family with a child with autism or like myself, a health professional in the middle of it, we are still discovering and still going through stuff. So it's a process and we got to keep our minds open to everything that could help our kids.
Right. And because every single child is different, it's hard to find, you know, there's not just one thing that works for everyone. So learning as much as you can to always be curious is such a key part of this journey, because Len and I know what worked for our son might not work for other people's children. So that's where we're also just all about supporting the parent so they can truly show up their best self to be the detective that's right for their kids.
Well, good. And thank you guys for, you know, spreading the message of awareness and hope that things can improve, but none of these kids, it is a spectrum. None of these kids are the same in what helps them. And you read stuff online and these things help, or this diet helps, or that did it. And then you try it for your kid and you're like, it didn't work for mine. So, you know, it's easy to get frustrated and it's easy to give up, but there's too many things out there to try.
And you have the benefit of having so many more data points. I mean, we work with clients, but you must have at this point, after a couple of decades, so many parents and children that you've worked with where the idea that things can improve, that the diagnosis can change, the diagnosis can be no longer relevant. You've seen that with your own eyes. I can't, you know, I'm not going to ask you percentages, but the idea that progress is possible is not just a slogan. This is something you witness perpetually, right? Continuously.
Every day. You know, people ask me that question. My patients come in and say, is this going to work? And, you know, my honest answer is, yeah, it is. we just can't predict how much. Is this going to be 25%, 50%, 75%? How much improvement will your child have? And is that the arena of language? Is that the arena of awareness and focus and cognition? Or is it physical? Is it a seizure? Is it migraines? Gut issues? There is always improvement. We've just got to figure out how much we can attain and how fast.
And is there any way that you measure? So we use an ATEC to kind of help the parent track progress with your child. But as you're working with individuals, is there any way that you look to measure a child's progress?
ATEC is a great place to start. So I think the ATEC is awesome. It's used by so many families. It's easy to do. It's used in the scientific research. So, if you're not familiar with the ATEC survey, Google it, do it. And it's a great objective way to track things.
Yeah. And we can put a link to the ATEC in the show notes.
And it's a self-assessment, so there's no cost, and it's pretty comprehensive. With your experience in working with individuals, knowing that every child is unique, you must be seeing some recurring themes. And if you think about a child who might be diagnosed, perhaps they have behavioral issues, communication issues, and the like. To dive to my passion, which is always understanding the root cause, what are you seeing emerge as a root cause that, if addressed in some way, can really help unlock progress, to improve health, to improve all aspects of how a child is operating?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. And, let me kind of break it down into a two-step process. Like you said, there's got to be a smoking gun. There's always a reason. This is just the basic laws of physics. Something or someone that's going in a certain direction isn't going to change directions unless something happens to them. And this is the same as health. This is the same in childhood development. A child is going to be developing normally unless they get shoved off that path. So yeah, we are looking for that smoking gun. Say, okay, what shoved me off that path of development? Okay. And then, so that's part one. And then part two kind of gets into, since I was shoved off that path of normal developmental schedule, why is this happening internally? Because autism and developmental delays are medical. This is a medical issue. There's stuff going on in different parts of our body. This isn't a choice. This isn't the child waking up and saying, hey, I don't want to talk today and just scream. No child wants that. No family wants that. So in my opinion, either a child, this is probably about 5 to 10% of kids on the spectrum. A child is either born with a genetic condition that causes the symptoms that get diagnosed as autism. Okay. So things like Fragile X, things like microdeletion, microduplication syndromes, a myriad of super rare genetic conditions that walk, talk, and quack like autism. So because autism is a subjective diagnosis, it's diagnosed that way. Right. But these kids don't often have the regression. These are just kids who were slow to develop from the beginning because they were born with a genetic condition that just needs to be tested and identified. One caveat of that, many genetic conditions are treatable. And a lot of people don't know that. They think, oh, geez, I was born with Down syndrome. I can't fix that. Well, that's true. You can't change your genetics, but you can treat them to make yourself as good as possible. So, that's one of the major causes. And then the other cause, which is the large majority of kids, is the developmental regression. The typical 12-month, 18-month, 24-month. And obviously a whole bunch of controversy behind what is that smoking gun, but so many factors for developmental regression that basically include large levels of toxicity of very, very different types of toxins that are out there, whether it's heavy metals like aluminum, mercury, and lead, whether it's a Tylenol toxicity, or how many other things out there that can affect the brain. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. So those eventually start affecting different parts of the body. And that's where we get, hit the ground where the rubber meets the road with treatments. So are these toxins affecting my brain and my brain chemistry? Are they affecting my mitochondria? Are they affecting my immune system? Are they affecting my hormones? So that's where we really get in the nitty gritty of how am I, you're in my office, you're have a telemedicine with me. How am I going to help you? That's where the rubber meets the road.
And so toxic load being a key root cause, whatever that the specifics might be, and it will vary from person to person, but you see toxic overload, let's say, as a key root cause that, if addressed, helps that person or that child to improve in some way, that you've seen that direct correlation.
All the time.
Can I just step back for one second? Because what you said, I loved, because you also said that, especially with kids with regression, there is this medical component. Because I know watching my son regress and watching him lose his words and lose connection, everything. And then you go and see a developmental pediatrician and they're just like, well, sucks for you, basically. Here's your nice report. You're going to have PTSD while you're reading it. You're going to like be triggered every time you even go see that front, you know, cover. Like, no one ever tells you it's medical. We figured out it was medical because our son's health crashed at the same time as his regression. So we supported his medical needs. And then his autism was impacted positive, you know, went from moderate to severe to mild autism. We did it on our own. But so many parents who get the diagnosis are never told about this medical connection, which I just wanted to reemphasize what you're saying, because it's such an important piece of this. If you want to truly support your child as best as you can, and they have a diagnosis, they may also have medical stuff going on that can be supported to help give them the best life and best future forward.
Completely. So, and again, there are so many different reasons and different ways that people react medically, but yeah, that is the message. And most conventional pediatricians aren't aware of it. If you're not dealing with something, you don't know about it. You know, don't ask me to change the oil in your car, because I have no idea how it happens. I drive in the garage and I give them some money and I walk away. But yeah, like yourselves and other health professionals, myself, man, when you're in it and you know it's medical and you evaluate the child and then you treat the child appropriately, all of a sudden things get better. All of a sudden they're talking. All of a sudden they're not having hour-long temper tantrums. All of a sudden they're not constipated and going to the bathroom twice a month. There's so many things, and that's the message. And that's kind of the place where we're in now in society. We've got to get this message out that there is hope and potential.
Without a doubt. And I'm actually just curious, because 12 years ago or so, when our journey started and we started going to conferences, at the time it was the Defeat Autism Now conference. And then it was well known that most pediatricians don't get this. They don't understand the medical component. And I have to imagine it's better now. Would you say it's marginally better? Is it significantly better? Like, is this more well known than it was 12 years ago? Is there really no difference?
I kind of live in my office. So, I've got these blinders on. I'm in my own world.
Your bubble.
I'm in my bubble. I'm helping families. So, you know, the only way I have kind of access to that is how my families talk to their pediatrician. And I haven't seen the awareness come up yet. I haven't heard a lot of pediatricians being like, oh yeah, there's an answer. Go see this person, or go see that person, or go get help besides OT, speech, and ABA. I don't see that a lot, but I hope I'm just naive about that. And I hope more pediatricians are becoming aware of things that can help.
Well, at the very least, I guess there's more integrative pediatricians and functional the like. So I'm going to be hopeful that yes, it's perhaps better, but clearly it's still not a well-understood concept that if you address medical underlying medical issues, that the things that get checked off that are considered a trait of autism, that those things can improve. And again, I know many people just truly don't have that message. So whatever we can do, along with what you're doing to spread that message, goes a long way.
All right. So when you were talking, and Len had asked the question as relates to themes.
Yeah.
And having gone through some of the products you have on your website, there seem to be a few different buckets. So mold seems to be something that comes up. I know for families that we support, mold seems to come up over and over again.
Yeah, that's definitely one arena. And, you know, kind of taking that and putting it into a bigger picture, because I like, you know, like as you said, Len, there's always this root cause, and you know, how do the dominoes fall so that you can to eventually go from that root cause to here's my kid. And to kind of go down those dominoes, when you have a child where toxicity is the cause, that affects a lot of different parts of the body. One of the parts of the body it affects is your immune system. And so we see a lot of kids have a deficient immune system, specifically in their gut. Okay, and there's different immune systems, immune system of the bloodstream, there's short term, there's long term. Then there's this gut and skin immune system. And anybody who's had stool tests done, you can look for something called an IgA level. That's basically the measurement of your immune system, your gut. So when that immune system starts to fail, anything and everything can grow inside your intestines. And that doesn't cause autism, but it sure makes things worse. You know, you get the kids with stomach pain and altered bowels, whether it's diarrhea, constipation, they got these big bloated bellies, they're always pushing on their belly. The kids who have the inappropriate laughter, you know, have these kids who just laugh randomly and like, whoa, what are you laughing at? What's that? I don't see anything funny. Those are the kids who tend to have infections in their gut. And we've seen it all. We've seen bacterial infections. I've diagnosed E. coli just two or three times this week alone. The parasites come up a lot. And fungus. You know, when we look at fungus, a lot of people are on the bandwagon of candida. And candida is one form of a yeast infection, one form of fungus. You know, and again, this can grow in your gut. This can, you know, for women, this can grow vaginally. This can grow anywhere it's dark and moist, under the breast, the armpits, the groin, athlete's foot, ringworm. It's all fungus and it grows very quickly on a lot of people. One other type of fungus besides candida is mold. Both mold, candida, yeast, those, they're all different types of fungi. So yeah, it's definitely an issue for a lot of people. If you've got mold in your house, if you open up the door to your basement and you just smell this mustiness, there's mold in the air. If you smell it, there's molecules in the air. And if that gets into your mouth, you swallow it, it gets into your intestines, and you can have mold growth inside your gut. So these infections, again, whatever they may be, mold, candida, yeast, bacteria, parasites, once they start to grow, they make a lot of behaviors worse. They make a lot of anxiety worse. They cause a lot of pain. And so you have these kids who have outbursts, you don't know why. So that's definitely a big arena, treating the gut, looking for infections, and supporting that immune system, which is kind of that linchpin key to why this is happening to begin with.
Right. That's where I know for our son, his head banging and his posturing his belly, like slamming his stomach into arms of furniture at the time, like those were all signs for him that he was in pain, like, and his gut was definitely messed up. And that's for so many parents who are listening, probably have a child who has some self-injurious behaviors or some things that are just, you know, the stomach, you're like, I'm not sure what he's doing, but he's comforting himself. Right. You might not sure the why, but you just gave a whole list of things that could be possibilities of what's going on for them.
Right. So decently easy to treat. You just like any kind of problem, if the problem's around you, you got to get rid of it. So in the instance of mold, you get rid of the mold. Okay. You know, like that old joke, you keep hitting your head with a baseball bat. You're like, hey doc, my head hurts. Well, stop hitting yourself with a bat. But then there's a lot of natural things that we can do to kill these bugs off. Again, whether it's a mold or a candida or bacteria, parasites, we got a lot of natural treatments. So you don't need to get into the arena of, hey, here's some heavy duty pharmaceutical with side effects. Here's what we can do naturally. Let's get rid of that. Let's get rid of the source and then move on to the next part, like peeling an onion away to get to that core, or licking a Tootsie Pop. For some reason, I watched that commercial the other day where the owl does three.
Oh, yeah.
The center of the Tootsie Pop. So let me date myself back to the 70s.
We're right there with you.
I just watched that commercial about a week ago, so I can be late. Trust me. It's an old friend.
I was trying to tell a patient of mine who was 17 in my office yesterday how to set the clock on a VCR. You got to hit two buttons simultaneously.
Yeah, right.
He was not interested in that.
Probably like, what is a VCR?
I saw that in the antique store the other day. But yeah, there's a lot of things that we can do to get rid of it naturally. And then once that part is gone, then we can get to the other parts. Then we can get to treating the brain and the nervous system, mitochondria, genetics, hormones, autoimmune. Yep. A myriad of things.
So you get rid of the source, right? So you do that work. And then if you're trying to remove the negative impact that mold may be having within the body, and you're saying that there's natural approaches, what can you do with respect to detoxifying? So maybe you can go in with something natural to help address it within the body. But in terms of detoxifying from the impact of mold, is sauna like a good option? Or what have you seen in terms of addressing mold issues from a detox perspective? Or is it really just about combating it with more natural elements that you're introducing?
If you think about mold as a live infection, You know, mold is a living organism. Okay, just like the mold that grows on your bread, it's alive. It's there. It's green. It's fuzzy. And if that is growing inside your colon, you know, and you can Google and find these pics of colonoscopies and endoscopies on kids with autism. Like, oh my God, it's supposed to be pink and it's covered in white. It, like you said, remove the source. But number two, it is a living organism, so it does need to be eradicated. Mm-hmm. From a natural perspective, you know, I love things like grapefruit seed extract and garlic, black walnut, oregano, you know, a lot of herbs have anti-mold chemicals because they out in nature, they need those anti-mold chemicals so they don't get moldy when they're in a rainy environment. So using those will kill those off. And you know, usually we add some kind of binder to help flush it out. A lot of people use charcoal, a lot of people use clay. That's basically just scrubbing the stuff out of there after you knock it out. And you know, then you do have these chemicals in your system from the mold. And you mentioned detox, and you know, to kind of explain how those get there, just like when we eat food, you know, the body, the intestines digest the food and you absorb calories and fats and proteins and vitamins. Same things happen in the intestines. The mold creates chemicals and that gets absorbed. So now all of a sudden that stuff is circulating in your bloodstream. Your liver and your kidneys are doing the best to get rid of it. But any kind of natural detoxification will help these clear the system in general. So you mentioned things like saunas, which are good. A lot of people use Epsom salt baths, which are good. There's a variety of different supplements that support liver function. That's good too. And I think the other thing that I don't want anybody to forget is, again, this all happened because the immune system wasn't functioning. So we've got to get that immune system back in gear. That's usually different supplements from mitochondrial support, like CoQ10 or carnitine, along with detoxifying the toxins that originally caused the immune deficiency to begin with. So again, layer after layer.
And as you're talking about, something I'm reminded of is when I introduced you, I talked about biomedical. And I'm mindful that some people may not really even understand what biomedical is. Would you mind just touching on that in terms of how that's different from, let's just say, medical?
Right. So the whole, you know, we've got conventional medicine. Conventional medicine today is drugs and surgery. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Saves lives, does wonderful things, but doesn't do everything. And so, you know, what's kind of filling the gap and gaining popularity over the past 2-3 decades is non-pharmaceutical interventions that still support the health of a person. So this has gone through a myriad of different names over the years. Biomedical is the current name, and that's just a fusion of medical and biology. So we're treating the biology of your body medically, okay? So it's supporting the body to heal itself versus, hey, I got high cholesterol. Here's some Lipitor. We're going to knock your Lipitor down. Let's get behind the reasons of that. So biomedical is kind of medically treating the biology. You may have heard the term Dan Doctor, which is, you know, kind of older term now for the Defeat Autism Now group. There's MAPS physicians, and MAPS is just a doctor organization that trains docs on how to help these kids. Functional medicine is another term, which is just, hey, I'm helping the function of your body. I'm helping your body function better. So all these different terms, but basically it means non-pharmaceutical things, non-surgical things that we can do to help you recover and help you be better.
Perfect. No, I think that's helpful. It's just as people understand, hey, what are the various options in terms of care for my child, which the established or conventional isn't always the best fit for every family and every child. So to really understand what those options are, is extremely important, right, especially right early on, to know, you know, to decide what's the best course. And you talked about the idea of toxins being a big root cause. Right. Is there any other that comes to mind that's outside of the area of toxins that you, from what you've seen, is a pretty prevalent root cause that, if addressed, can improve things? And I know you talked about how some percent of autism is true genetic,
right,
but there's also the idea that a lot of people have a genetic makeup that may make them more prone,
sure,
to being impacted by things like toxins and the like. So what comes to mind when you think of another, maybe perhaps related, but still a different root cause?
I'm glad you brought that up, you know, because there's a difference between, I was born with a genetic condition. Like, I was born with Fragile X. I was born with Down syndrome. I was born with whatever that's genetic. You know, I'm going to have that forever. And then there's people who are predisposed to developmental regression. And that predisposition comes from certain genetics, All right. And, you know, kind of not to get into this conversation, but, you know, let's talk about COVID, where, hey, most people get sick and recover, but then there's this small percentage that have a genetic predisposition to get really, really sick. And it's scary. Right. Okay. Same thing with the spectrum. I'm not born with a genetic condition, but I've got these genetic predispositions that I'm going to have developmental regression, but not all these other people. And so we do get into, and this is really the core of my work with my patients, we get into the genetics behind the brain and how the brain functions, as well as the genetics of detoxification. You know, one of the bigger ones that I look at, you know, we do a lot of genetic analysis for our patients. One of the big ones that I look at are glutathione genetics. And glutathione is something that helps heal the body. It helps detoxify a lot of pharmaceuticals, such as Tylenol, acetaminophen, and paracetamol. And you combine those, that toxin hit, with bad genetics for how the brain functions. And this is where you get the brain that's not developing. And that can be language, that can be sleep, that can be behavior, that can be sensory, that can be motor. I mean, so many things that our families deal with the kids on the spectrum are all controlled by the nervous system. And so, you know, that arena, luckily for my practice, gives us fast response. When we treat that nervous system, improvements happen fast. When we do other things like mold removal and detox, it's a slower game. So it's all these different factors you've got to tweak and look at.
Right. And once you understand the genetic susceptibilities, right, everyone's got their own unique gene makeup. There's really kind of no good or bad. It's just you have what you have, and you could have, quote unquote, an impaired gene like MTHFR. But if there's no environmental trigger, it may not ever manifest in any kind of way.
Right.
So it's really knowing what your makeup is and having that information can be useful to then understand what are things that might make sense to avoid, what things can you do more of. So you take that into consideration as well as you're looking at a patient, correct?
All the time. You know, I'm glad you brought up MTHFR because it's very popular nowadays.
It's trending.
It's MTHFR trending, maybe.
can I tell you that a couple of, maybe 5 years ago, I asked, we knew my son's status. We didn't know my daughter's. So I was like, hey, doc, can you know, run this for me? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And like, wouldn't do it. And I was like, fine, we'll do it ourselves. But like, it was like, it's still not, here's a pediatrician. She was not on her radar. Nope. So it's still new so it is trending. And it is something that you hear more and more, but a lot of doctors don't even know how to embrace it.
They don't. And even geneticists don't as well. I work with a fair number of geneticists because we do a lot of genetic analysis. And when you talk to geneticists, they're interested in genetic disease. Hey, I was born with this thing. MTHFR, while very popular nowadays, and it's popular because it's treatable. It's one of the genes that is 100% treatable, which is awesome. So geneticists look at that and go, you don't have a genetic disease. Get out of my office. I don't want to talk about this. This is something that's not functioning in up to 50% of the population. Mm-hmm. In our kids on the spectrum, I would say 90 to 95%. But again, it's one gene. What you treat MTHFR mutations with are different forms of folate. You use methylfolate or deplin or folinic acid or leucovorin. You combine that with B12. And for people who need it, it's amazing. You know, a lot of your listeners may have heard of or tried B12 shots. We're throwing, you know, adding on leucovorin to a B12 shot. And that works for a lot of people, but man, does it not work and make things worse for so many? Because while you may have an MTHFR gene that's not functioning 100%, you got all these other genetics around it that play a role. And so you've really got to look at a whole picture of genetics to look at how the brain's functioning, because you've got to, you know, and again, this is where we do most of my work. You've got to get that brain chemistry balanced. Things like serotonin that make you happy, or dopamine that bring focus and concentration. It's a balance of the genes that bring it in and move it out.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting because MTHFR is the most talked about, probably because it's perhaps the most studied, but it's just one of many, many genes. And the idea of just addressing that itself in isolation is kind of risky unless you're really looking at that whole profile. And I'm not even sure, I know at least as of relatively recently, even 23andMe, if that's the service that you're using to kind of just get a sense of what's happening genetically, they wouldn't even tell you what your MTHFR status was. And I still don't think they do, because they don't consider it to be quote unquote significant.
Right.
So as much as it's trending, at least in many circles, it's still not recognized. Right. And, you know, it's easy to say, hey, I have an MTHFR quote unquote mutation, so I'm going to take methylfolate or MB12. Right. But even that, you know, without understanding what else is going on with COMT or other genes, you know, what that best course of action may not be so clear. And whereas you need to work with somebody who really knows how to navigate that area.
Yeah, you got to put that whole puzzle together. And this is why we've got at least 50% of my patients who say, hey, I tried B12, whether it's oral, whether it's shots. My kid went bonkers. They're bouncing off the walls. They're not sleeping. They're hyper. They're hitting. Just such a overstimulation because you're not looking at the big picture. You're looking at one thing and mistakes are going to happen.
So yeah, it's a little bit complicated, but definitely an area of potential opportunity. But I'm very interested that you think from your patients that like 90 to 95%, that's a huge number. What percent of your patients would have the double mutation?
You know, to look at the normal population, you know, if you look at the world, it's half. 40% of people have one mutation and 10% of people have both mutations. So again, when you think of your DNA, you get half your DNA from mom, half your DNA from dad. And this MTHFR, you've got a piece on each piece of DNA. So you could have one piece not working or both pieces not working. 50% of the world is totally normal. 40% has one, 10% have both. And both is worse. I would say in my kids, again, 90-95% of my practice have at least one MTHFR mutation. I would say probably 20-30% have double rather than 10%.
Yeah, that's a significant data point. Cass is laughing because I have the double. but our son has the one and right. A1298C. So it's an important data point.
Yeah.
Definitely something to factor in as you're looking at all the data in terms of trying to decide, well, what might help move the needle the most, help support a child the most. So love that that's part of how you're looking to help empower parents with more options.
I have one question because I know I did this with my son. I did not do this with my daughter because I learned, but we've talked about Tylenol a couple times,
right.
But we haven't, because I know, you know, Tylenol is often used for fevers or teething or after medical procedures, whatever. So I just wanted to, Tylenol, it blocks what, glutathione production? Is that like?
Yeah. So here's kind of the big story. And again, the short story is just like you said, hey, Tylenol has been used forever. And it's, you know, you have a fever and you use Tylenol and the fever goes down. You have pain, you use Tylenol, it goes away. Great. However, go to any hospital, go to any emergency room. They have an outline protocol on how to treat Tylenol toxicity. Okay. So let's say your kid takes a whole bottle, you're going to get toxic. Why? Because it can cause a huge amount of liver and brain damage. Now, not everybody gets that. But again, we talk about these genetic predispositions. If you've got the genetic problems where you cannot detox and remove Tylenol like most of the world can, it's going to build up and cause liver and neurological damage. And more research is being done showing the association of, hey, I took a bunch of Tylenol and all of a sudden I have this developmental regression. So we have more and more research done. I have a great interview with a scientific researcher from Duke who does a lot of this research about Tylenol toxicity. And here's another interesting side note. There's a new drug that's approved, which is IV Tylenol. Okay, they basically have acetaminophen or paracetamol for your internationals. It's IV. I got to give it to people. You know what they included in there? They included the antidote. So not only am I giving you acetaminophen or Tylenol, I'm giving you the antidote because I know it can be poisonous. Wow. So wrap your brain around that one.
That was like my father put it in the first place. Well, you know, that's what they do.
But so I've got this great interview on my website, and he's so smart and he handles so much of this research. And he wrote my favorite study about Tylenol and autism. It was two researchers from Duke and two from Harvard that are saying, look at this correlation. Here's the genetic predisposition that makes this happen and causes developmental regression. And he talks in the interview about how he goes and lectures at these huge pediatric conferences and they just don't believe him. They're like, nah, we've been doing this forever. Like, yes, but you've got to open your eyes up to what can happen. And I contacted Johnson & Johnson, who owns Tylenol. And I said, look, all these research studies are coming out. Where can you show me your safety data that Tylenol does not cause neurological or developmental regressions? And guess what? Tylenol was approved however many decades ago before the safety testing was necessary. So there are no safety studies on Tylenol and kids and autism. So until you can prove it's safe, then we have to question whether it is.
And there's no incentive for them to run any studies. There's no upside doing that.
So I'm kind of having a mind blow because that's one piece of my son's puzzle we've never put together. Right. So that's where I'm like, holy shit, I feel like going grabbing his timeline to be like, what have I missed?
Yeah, we were all over the Tylenol.
Because Tylenol was something that was used often.
Yeah. And again, that's the story of most regression. You go into the doctor's office, you do what they do, and they say, hey, take some Tylenol. So all of a sudden, that developmental regression event has multiple factors. Even we as parents dismiss that. Be like, oh, it couldn't be Tylenol, perfectly safe, everybody takes it. Right. This regression event has many factors.
Yeah, there's a lot of contributors. But if I could switch gears a little bit, though, to one of the most deep-seated desires that a parent has is for speech and communication. They want more than anything for that to emerge. And we were those people who didn't have that early on and prayed for our son to be able to communicate and to talk. And now we're the opposite, where he won't stop talking. So we've been blessed that our son was able to form words and is conversive now. But for so many parents, that's a real, real challenge. And when they see that their child's behind, it feels so incredibly hard. What have you seen in terms of what can move the needle the most to free up the possibility that the child developed more language and that becomes something, and I'm guessing it's going to be related to something physical, right? Where if you improve how the body's functioning, it can't help but help the possibility that speech can emerge.
At the end of every appointment that I have with my families, I ask the question, what are your goals? What do you want? I am here to try to help anything possible. What do you want? Number one is always language. Always. You don't know what they're thinking. You don't know what they're feeling. You got to get, are they happy? Are they in pain? Are they scared? You got to get in there. And the kids are smart. You know, kids on the spectrum are just as smart as any other kid. Our society just judges intellect based on what comes out of that face hole. That's how we think we know how smart you are. So that is always the number one goal for most of my families. So I've been working on it and researching it and honing our natural treatments for it. What works best for me is making sure all the chemicals in the brain are there for the brain to function. You know, the brain runs on fuel, and the brain creates all these different chemicals. They create serotonin, it creates dopamine, it creates adrenaline, it creates GABA, it creates a histamine, which is my new thing for next year. So many different chemicals that affect the brain, and you've got to have all of these at the right levels. And if you don't, then all of a sudden the brain can't develop. The brain doesn't have the fuel to function. So when we kind of take that and say, okay, I need to balance brain chemistry, how do I do that? You've got to provide the brain with the fuel that it uses to make these chemicals. You are what you eat, period. Even the chemicals in your brain are made from your food specifics. They are made from protein, and they are made from specific amino acids. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein, and they're made from certain vitamins. So as I tell my families, look, if you've got peanut butter, jelly, and bread in your kitchen, you're going to make a peanut butter jelly sandwich. If you've got these amino acids and these vitamins, the brain takes them and turns them into chemicals, turns them into serotonin, turns them into adrenaline, turns them into dopamine. So what we do first is we analyze your brain chemistry levels. And this is really easy. We get a urine collection. We send it to your local lab. If you use Quest or LabCorp or a hospital, they all do this testing. They can test your brain chemicals in your urine. Your insurance pays for it. It's easy to do. So we can say, okay, you're deficient in serotonin, or you have, you know, and that's why you can't sleep, or you're not happy, or you can't speak, or hey, look at your adrenaline levels. They're through the roof. That's why you're bouncing off the walls, or that's why you've got insomnia because you're in fight or flight all the time. And so from there, we can pick and say, okay, these are the amino acids that make serotonin. You're deficient. We're going to give this to you. The one for serotonin is tryptophan. You know, just like Thanksgiving, you're happy and you're tired after you eat the turkey. It's the tryptophan. We give the amino acids, we give the vitamins. The one that I see the most effect with is folinic acid. And so you give these amino acids, you give the folinic acid, a couple different minerals like magnesium and zinc and B6 and lithium orotate. And all of a sudden you change brain chemistry. Okay, it happens within an hour or two of taking these natural supplements. You can change brain chemistry fast. That's where we start to see the language. So where I see the biggest, and I see it different in boys and girls. Boys, we really push serotonin. So we give folinic acid, we give tryptophan and tryptophan derivatives like 5-HTP. We start to get some language. Girls, in general, tend to do better increasing their dopamine. So we use an amino acid called tyrosine. You know, that's one of my favorite stories. One of my favorite stories, I was lecturing at a TACA convention 3 years ago. And this mom came up to me on Friday, started a conference, and we talked about her child, like, oh, you know, here she is, she doesn't talk. So I said, you know what? I think you need this. We have this tyrosine supplement in our line. You know, our supplements, we try to make powders and we try to make tasteless for our kids because we know they're picky eaters, they got sensory issues. You know, how many of you have closets full of vitamins you never use because they don't like the taste? So we try to make stuff flavorless. We always make it gluten-free, dairy-free. So I gave her the tyrosine. And 2 days later on Sunday, she came back and she started tearing up. I started tearing up. I'm like, okay, what's going on? She said, today's my birthday. And before I left to come to the conference, my daughter, she knelt me down and she held my face and she said, happy birthday, Mom.
Oh my God.
Little child who hadn't talked, exactly. I'm tearing up thinking about it. This is a child who hadn't talked in months. So it can happen fast when you give the right nutrition, okay? And the supplements work faster than changing your diet. You give the right amino acids, you give the right vitamins, serotonin, dopamine, folinic acid. We get so much language out of those fast. And again, your language isn't going to like all of a sudden reciting Shakespeare overnight. But can I go from somebody who uses one word for requests to a group of words to some scripting to eventual conversational language? It is a process. But hey, if I'm moving faster than the other kids in speech therapy, if I'm improving faster than the other kids in my classroom, then we're doing something right.
Yeah, that's great. No, and anything to be able to give a kickstart, to give what's needed, what the body can use, the supplements can sometimes speed things up. But the idea of also really helping a parent to truly prioritize food and to provide those building blocks, those essential building blocks as a habit every day to feed nourishing foods, a diverse array of foods. Cass is starting her Healing Kitchen Boot Camp next week, which is designed to empower parents with being able to take control in the kitchen and to nourish as opposed to just feed their child. Awesome. And it's just such a, regardless of what you choose to do for food, using the power of food is just something that can benefit anyone, especially children who are on the spectrum.
Yep. Agreed.
I love the idea too of that quick urine test that can be run for kids just to kind of see what that imbalance might be. Question. Now, when you work with patients, I know you're based in Connecticut. Do you work?
I am 90% telemedicine.
Okay.
Which I love. I want no barriers between me helping you. At all. So, I mean, just yesterday, I'm in Connecticut, like you said. I talked to somebody in Florida. I talked to somebody in California. I talked to somebody in Greece. I talked to somebody in Italy. And that was just one day. Right. So I love helping people everywhere, period.
And with the people that you, the patients that you serve, I know the supplements can play a key role in that. We know personally, we're really big on supplements early on with this crazy cocktail that my son would drink. I don't know how he drank it, but that not all supplements are created equal either, because there's a lot of crap in a lot of supplements. They may have the right ingredients, but they may also have other stuff that kind of counteracts or negates the effectiveness.
Like you were saying, where you don't put flavors in a lot of yours because kids are sensitive or kids have allergies and ingredients can hide in things like flavors.
We love that it's everything that you have is gluten-free, dairy-free, but the other ingredients can also kind of get in the way. So as you're creating your blends, what's your philosophy? How do you come up with the combinations that you come up with?
Well, so two parts to that. Number one, I was working with kids for like 12, 13 years before I even started making my own supplements. But I would, I would say, geez, I want you to take XYZ ABC. And people would come back and say, hey, this works, but holy cow, I'm a pharmacist every morning putting my little concoctions together. And I said, okay, well, because I'm giving this group of supplements for this kind of thing, I'm going to package it all in one. So we get together with these vitamin factories, say, make this for me, and they make it. Okay. So it starts out with, let me make your life easier by putting all these things together that you'll use. And again, there is no one magic formula. So you got this formula for a slow brain, this formula for a fast brain, this formula for mitochondria, yada, yada. And then you've got to get the kids to take it. My philosophy with the supplements that we create is we understand most kids don't swallow pills. So I want this as a powder. I want this to be able to be easily adjusted. So if your kid needs a little more or a little less, with a powder, it's super easy to do. And we want it as tasteless as possible. Okay. Because yeah, we know our kids are picky and that we got to work with that. So, you know, we try to make it as tasteless as possible, which is basically just put in the stuff that you need and don't add anything else, because the anything else is just to flavor it or, you know, to make it pretty. You know, why do we have all these artificial colors in here? And, you know, just to make things pretty. So, you know, most of our products are like that. Not all, but, you know, we're always trying to improve our stuff. Like you said, everything is gluten-free and dairy-free, always will be, because that's essential. But can we make something that's tasteless or as tasteless as possible? Or if we, you know, some ingredients, when you look at vitamin supplements, they have a flavor. You know, anybody who uses glutathione cream knows that stuff stinks like rotten eggs. So how can we adjust the flavor of things if our ingredients have a flavor themselves? So it's tricky, but the end goal is, let me make sure we can get this in you. And let me make sure it's going to be as easy as possible. And let's make sure it works.
Makes sense to me. Is there anything that you've observed of parents who have more success, however you want to define success in terms of supporting their child? Is there anything that you've noticed with parents who tend to get the outcomes they're looking for? Is there any qualities in the parents?
Well, I would say in one word, it's persistence. You know, because guess what? Like we've been saying the whole time, none of these kids are the same. None of these kids are the same medically. None of these kids are the same genetically. There are groups. Yeah. You know, hey, this is one kind of kid, another kind of kid. Yeah. But if you try something and it doesn't work, don't give up. Be persistent. There's always something else to try. And this is what I tell my people. I say, look, give me 3 to 6 months. And if you see some improvements, we're still going to work together. But if I don't help you at all, you got to move on. You've got to help your kid. That is the number one priority over me or what I do or anybody else. You do what helps your kid, but never lose hope. You know, I people come in my office and they say, I have tried everything. I'm like, okay, what is everything? Or everything was A, B, C, D. All right. There's also this. Let's try E, F, G. So it's persistence. It's stubbornness. It's never giving up. And you've got to try things and give them time, but we're also under the gun with how fast these kids are developing and growing up. You know, you've got to make sure if you give something 3 to 6 months, it doesn't work, move on to the next thing. I've seen people do stuff for years and be like, well, this didn't work. And I did it for 3 years. I'm like, holy cow, we got to move faster, people. We got to help these kids.
No, I think that's all great advice. It's always a balance, right? Between really giving something your full effort and giving it a chance to work and not giving up too early and knowing when's the time to, okay, let's shift. Yeah. And sometimes maybe A, B, and C that you tried 6 months ago, that might work now because you're in a different place, your child's in a different place. So it's quite the art, but I think that's definitely sage advice. We really appreciate you taking the time to sit with us today and just love what you're doing to help empower parents, help them find their answers. We couldn't be more excited about the work that you're doing. So thanks again for spending the time with us.
Well, thanks for having me here on your podcast. And, you know, we just want to reach as many families as possible to spread the word of hope.
Want to learn how to avoid the 33 mistakes most autism parents make? Get your free training today. Visit autismparentingsecrets.com/unstoppable.